You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Good afternoon to everyone, and welcome to the show. I want to let everybody know at the beginning that next week I'm going to have a very special guest on, and I'm encouraging everybody to contact your friends and relatives and your co-workers. Let them know about this guest and about this show next week, because you're going to get some vital information from Kevin Freeman, who is a noted economist and has written several books, the most recent of which is Game Plan. Kevin has been on CNN, on Fox Business, on Fox News. He's been interviewed all over the country, and he's a good friend of mine and has agreed to come on my show next week. And basically, Kevin is going to talk about, and I've heard him speak here recently at a group I belong to, and Kevin is going to talk about how vulnerable this country is to cyber attacks. And what would happen in the event of a major cyber attack that took out our electric grid, or some other type of attack that took out our electric grid, or even worse, an EMP attack, which is the electronic magnetic pulse that you hear people talk about, but nobody knows much about. Even Fox News recently has been reporting that the vulnerability of the electric grid in this country is incredible. And an EMP attack, this would be a nuclear weapons that would be set off as much as 100 miles above us and could basically knock out most of the United States. All of our power. And I'm not just talking about the electric grids. I'm talking about knock out your car. Fry the starters in your car. We would have no access to money in the banks. You'd have no access to gasoline, very little access to food. Food shortages would start appearing almost immediately. People on medication would not be able to get their medication. And we're talking about something that could last a year or even two or more years if we suffer some kind of attack like that. And there are other vulnerabilities to the electric grid, such as cyber attacks, which are occurring on a daily basis and getting more and more sophisticated. And then about a year ago, in April of last year, there was something that went almost totally unreported to the national news media until recently when a couple of outlets have talked about it. And basically that was an attack on the Silicon Valley power plant, where a group of approximately seven armed men went into the tunnels near the power plant, shut off the phone lines, cut the phone lines, and then open fire with automatic weapons, AK-47s to be specific, open fire on the transformers at that power plant. And they knocked out several of the transformers. Now, this was a test run to see how much damage they could do and how much damage they could do in a short amount of time. Fortunately, since it was only one power plant being attacked, it did not succeed in shutting down any major portion of the grid, because the other plants picked up the slack. But what happens if there's a simultaneous attack around the state of California, or around the country for that matter? They could knock out enough of those plants so that our power grids would be shut down in a lot of places. And we're talking again about a month or two at least of being shut down, and a lot of bad things can happen in a month or two. So Kevin is going, I'm not going to steal any more of his thunder, because he can explain all this a lot better than I can. He can explain the economics of it, and he can also talk about how you can help prepare yourself and your family for the real possibility that this might happen. Because I'm afraid, based on what I've heard from Kevin and now I'm hearing from others, is it's not just a possibility, it's a probability. And it could happen at any time. We're particularly vulnerable once the Iranians get capabilities to deliver their nuclear weapons. And believe me, the reliable sources now are saying that they already have at least one nuclear weapon. They just don't have the delivery system set in place yet. But they have a nuclear weapon. Obama's going to allow them basically to develop any of the nuclear weapons as they want. They have been basically spitting in the face of the United States recently, saying that despite the so-called agreement that we have with them, which, by the way, is supposed to, in the next month or two, be finalized, if they're obeying the rules, which they're not obeying the rules, and they're basically saying they're not obeying the rules, and they're saying, you're not going to be able to do anything about it, because Obama needs a foreign policy win in order to spur the Democrats to help him get elected in November. And this would, he would tout this as a foreign policy win. It would be a win for him, a loss for the United States, a loss for the American people, a loss for the rest of the world. But since when does Obama care about the people of the United States or the people of the rest of the world, for that matter, unless you're Muslim? And then you have his attention, you have his compassion, you have his concern. So we're looking at the Iranians having nuclear weapons and being able to continue with those weapons. And, you know, this so-called agreement, it's going to be touted as a big victory for Obama, just like the health care bill is being touted as a big victory. Supposedly 7.1 million people signed up within the deadline for health care. Now, those figures come from where? They come from the White House. They have not been independently confirmed. Insurance companies haven't confirmed them. Because how many people signed up? Well, we don't know. Even if it's correct, the figure is 7.1 million people have enrolled in or signed up for Obamacare, how many of them have actually enrolled and paid premiums? Or are all these people on Medicare? Or Medicaid, I should say. Because many of them are. Millions of these people are on Medicaid, which means they're not paying any premiums, they're not paying into the system. They're just going to be milking money out of the states and out of the federal government. The people that have signed up, we don't know their ages. Remember, there was talk about it had to be at least 40% of the people that signed up are what they call the young invincibles, the people who really don't necessarily need health insurance but have to sign up and pay premiums high enough to take care of everybody else who's being subsidized. We have no idea how many of those people have signed up. And by the way, the people being subsidized include illegal aliens and include non-citizens of the United States. Did you know that in order to sign up more people to the deadline, the Obama people were holding meetings in Mexican and other foreign consulates around the country to sign up foreign nationals, particularly from Mexico? They did this in South Texas. And it wasn't in a consulate. It was just an area down there that they rented, and they brought in people from Mexico to sign up for Obamacare. And these are people, some of them who live in Mexico, who work in the United States right across the border, that just come in temporarily. They are now signed up for free health care in the United States. Other people don't have any ties with the United States other than they live close to our borders. They're Mexican citizens, yet they are being signed up for our health care system so that they will have a right to get the health care. The illegals in this country, well, we have no illegals in this country anymore. I mean, even Jeb Bush has come out and said, they're not here because they want to break the law. They're here because they love us. Yeah, they love us enough to break our laws, to come into our country, to take food off the table of American citizens, to hide in the shadows, refuse to pay taxes. Many of them are convicted of felonies. They drive around if they have an automobile, they drive around with no insurance. If they're in an accident, you and I have to pay, or our insurance companies have to pay. They're breaking our laws. And they're flaunting it. And then when they do, if they do become legal and get right to vote, who are they going to vote for? 90% of them are going to vote for the Democrats. That's what this is all about. And Jeb Bush, if he's thinking about running for president, he's an idiot if he thinks he's going to get a big portion of the Hispanic vote. It's not going to happen. And by touting to the illegals out there, to the lawbreakers and to the liberals that want all of them legalized so they can all eventually become citizens and all vote registered to vote in the Democratic Party. This is the type of thing that's happening. And these people, these illegals, are being signed up for Obamacare. How do we know that? Because there's a website in Spanish put out by the U.S. government that basically says you need to sign up for the health care, the ACA, the Affordable Health Care Act. You need to sign up for it. And we are not going to check into whether you are here legally or not. So all they have to do is fill out the form. They don't have to say that it's the U.S. citizens. They don't have to use a Social Security number. They can just sign up, and they will get health care. Who pays for that health care? Well, you know, they're not going to be paying for it. At the very least, they're going to be getting subsidies. But for the most part, they're not going to be paying for it at all. You and I are going to be paying for it. There are not going to be enough people signed up for Obamacare to pay for the system. So what are they going to do? Well, Obama's already started. He's cutting Medicare. That's a system that you and I have paid into all of our working lives on the promise, the basis of a promise, that our health care would be taken care of once we turn 65. Obama has already taken $500 billion out of Medicare and transferred it into the Affordable Care Act. He did that to help the illegal, again, by setting up free clinics throughout the West and Southwest, and in some places of the Southeast and Midwest, setting up free clinics for immigrants, quote-unquote. But guess what? The employees of these facilities are not allowed to ask anybody who comes in there whether or not they are here legally or not legally. So again, free health care for illegals. Something I predicted back in 2009 was going to happen. I wrote an article for my blog. It's the first article on my blog. It's an article that really created it. And if you want to read it, go to www.michaelconnelly.com. And you can look at the article. It's the first one that was written there, so it'll be all the way back in the archives. But you can find it. And you'll notice in there that I said there would be free health care for illegal aliens. I was immediately attacked for saying that. I was attacked by George Soros' group, Media Matters, viciously, and by other liberal groups, saying, no, it's in the law. Illegals can't get free health care. Yes, it was supposedly in that law, but I read the law. This was the original bill introduced, not the one that passed, the original. And the wording was so poorly in there that I said, no, they're just going to bypass this. Well, then the final version came out and was passed, and that originated in the United States Senate. And I read that version, and the wording there was even worse than the wording in the original law. Basically, it said that illegals couldn't get medical care, health care, but now we have them getting health care. Why? Well, Obama's changed the law. He's personally amended a law passed by Congress on over 30 separate occasions now, all of which were done for his political benefit, not to help people, but for his political benefit. And let's take our first break now.
Who is or what is USJF? It is a nonprofit legal organization founded to protect our rights through the U.S. Constitution. Active in educating the public, USJF has also contributed directly and indirectly to legal defense efforts in many celebrated cases involving fundamental conservative principles. Cases of note include the Mount Soledad Cross case, the Arizona immigration law case, the Obama eligibility cases, the NDAA illegal detention issue, and many more. Help this nonprofit as they help you. Visit www.usjf.net today.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on americaswebradio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on americaswebradio.com anytime you like.
Watchdog is a term given an organization like the United States Justice Foundation, which since 1979 has been watching out and, when necessary, taking the appropriate action, from testifying to litigating, to protect our constitutional rights. USJF, a nonprofit organization, is nationally recognized not only as a watchdog, but many in the government, as well as those involved in legal cases, have also called the USJF a bulldog for the tenacious approach in their presentation and proof of what is right. Find out more at www.usjf.net. Support USJF as they support you.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
So we have Obamacare. We have illegals getting free treatment under Obamacare. Well, not free. It's being paid for by us, you and I, the U.S. taxpayer, not by the illegals themselves. People don't, you know, can seem to forget that when the federal government spends money, it's not their money. The federal government, as such, generates no income. All it does is spend money. And they're very good at it. We're up $17 trillion. Up above $17 trillion. That is our national debt right now. And it just keeps climbing on a daily basis. But you heard the figure $150 million. $150 million, that's almost like $17 trillion. It's almost hard to imagine how much money that really is. $150 million would heat a lot of homes during the winter for American families. $150 million would do a lot to help our soldiers and our veterans. $150 million would keep our commissaries open in the United States, keep them from being cut on military bases, which is going to be disastrous for our military families. They're going to cut their income drastically because they're going to be spending more money on groceries than they'd have to. So where does that figure $150 million come from? Well, after the trip to China by Michelle and the girls and her mother and sister-in-law and hangers-on and whoever she decided to take on that trip, because remember the press wasn't allowed to report anything about the trip, so it was all basically done in secret. But what wasn't a secret was the fact that she was staying in a hotel that the rooms cost like $84,000 a night. And so the figure $150 million is what the Obamas have spent since he took office, 5 years since he was elected president of the United States, almost 5 years. Since he took office, well, a little over 5 years, I guess, since he took office, $150 million on vacations. On vacations for he and Michelle and the girls and their relatives, $150 million. I venture to say that's more than the last three or four presidents combined. You remember George Bush's vacations? Where did he go when he took some time off? He went to Camp David, which is not far from Washington, D.C., a helicopter ride away. Or he went to his ranch in Crawford, Texas. Yes, he had Secret Service with him, so yes, it did cost some money. But he wasn't paying for the use of the ranch. He wasn't even paying, for the most part, to house the Secret Service that was with him. Where did Ronald Reagan go when he was president? He went to his ranch in California, or he went to Camp David. George Bush Sr., spend most of his time in Camp David or up at the private family home up in Maine. Where does Obama go for vacations? He goes to Europe. They go to Hawaii every year. Spend hundreds of thousands of dollars renting a mansion in Hawaii. They take numerous Secret Service agents with them. They take numerous staff members with them to take care of them, to make sure that their every need is whim is met. All of this is done by the first family when Americans are still losing their jobs, are still unemployed at an alarmingly high rate. And by the way, the rate is something like 21% now, if you count the real unemployed, the people who have given up trying to find work, the people who have found work, but it's part-time. It just barely puts food on the table. It's not the type of work they're trained for or educated for. You take all those people in, and the underemployed and unemployed rate in this country is well over 20%. And it hasn't really changed since all this fell apart pretty much after Obama took office. So 150 million folks, why aren't people screaming about that? Well, David and I were talking about this before the show. And basically, my view, they're not screaming about it because they don't know about it. How many times on the mainstream media have you heard anybody talk about Obama's vacations, Michelle's trips, in a negative manner? And they certainly don't mention how much they cost. This is being totally kept from the American public. You got almost too much going on in the government to talk about. You got the scandals that continually break. And I don't know if you heard yet, but a House committee, the Ways and Means Committee, this morning voted by a 23-14 margin. The 23 Republicans on the committee voted for this, and the 14 Democrats voted against it. And that is to request Eric Holder to file criminal charges against Lois Lerner. I remember Lois Lerner was the one that was basically put in charge by the Obama administration of an IRS program to set up a hit list to go after 501c4 and 501c3 organizations like mine. And basically, these were the initial charge was to keep these organizations, particularly those who were not 501c4 yet, were not tax-exempt or 501c3, but were asking to become tax-exempt organizations so that people can contribute to them and write that off their taxes. Now, there are certain rules and regulations they have to comply with, such as, for the most part, they cannot endorse candidates. My organization, the United States Justice Foundation, we don't endorse candidates, local, state, or federal, doesn't matter. But we do talk about issues that are important to American voters. We talk about the Constitution. That's what this radio show is all about, talking about the Constitution. Yet, any organization that applied for tax-exempt status and agreed to do on that basis, it didn't matter. They were, the word progressive, not progressive, the word progressive was in their organization's name, then they were almost automatically approved. If there was Tea Party or 9/12 Project or Patriots or Christian or anything like that in their name, they were red flagged. Their applications were put on hold, and their people applying were harassed. The IRS was sending them questions that they had no right to ask. They were demanding the names of their donors, demanding the names, not just the names, names, addresses, telephone numbers, email addresses of all the donors. The same for all the officers. The same even for volunteer workers. The purpose being so these people could be harassed during the 2010 and 2012 election, and they would not volunteer their time or they would not donate money. And guess what? It worked. Even though many of the organizations refused to answer the questions, some of the information that was confidentially submitted to the IRS, because a list of officers and that sort of thing is supposed to go to the IRS, but it's supposed to be confidential. Well, the IRS, under Lois Lerner, had her orders, turn this confidential information over to liberal groups who then use that information to harass donors, to keep them from donating to these groups during the 2010 and 2012 political campaigns. They harassed these people. They successfully kept a lot of these organizations from spending money to push the issues they were interested in. Well, they were pro-gun, pro-life, anti-big government, pro-free speech, Christian organizations, you name it, they were targeted. Lois Lerner was the architect of this. We know for a fact that she is the one that was running the operation, and she is the one that set this up. She had actually been planning it since Obama was elected to office, and then she came before Congress, and she refused to answer questions. She invoked her Fifth Amendment right, which she had already waived because she had already spoken to federal investigators about this, and she had already gone in front of the committee and made a statement about how innocent she was. That waived her right to invoke the Fifth Amendment. But she did it anyway. So she refused to answer questions in front of Congress. So she was held, that Congress is voting to hold her in contempt. But what's that going to mean? Well, nothing. Because Eric Holder, the Attorney General, has been held in contempt. And he ignores it. And nobody's going after him. Nobody's prosecuting him for the things he's done. And we'll get into more of that in a minute. So the Congress is asking Eric Holder to prosecute Lois Lerner. That's his job. She has committed numerous crimes. That's his job. That's what he takes an oath of office to do, to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And somebody like Lois Lerner is an enemy of the Constitution because she's tried to destroy the right to free speech in this country. Yet Eric Holder violates the same oath of office on a daily basis. So he's not going to prosecute her. So Congress voted to ask him to prosecute. He'll get that on his desk today or tomorrow. He'll light it up. He'll throw it in the trash can, and that'll be the end of it. Lois Lerner is going to get away with it because nobody in the Obama administration ever gets prosecuted for anything. Nobody in the Obama administration gets fired. Nobody even gets laid off. I mean, Lois Lerner is not on her job anymore, but she's on administrative leave, fully paid leave. Now, how does that grab you, folks? I wouldn't mind being paid a full salary, government salary, which I'm sure is well over $100,000 in her case. And all I have to do to earn it is sit on my butt all day long and lie if necessary on behalf of the Obama administration. So nothing's going to happen to Lois Lerner. In the meantime, the Internal Revenue Service is going to move to, not only are they continuing with what they're doing because nobody's getting punished, but they're making a move now to stifle free speech even further. Doing it prior to this upcoming 2014 election. Doing it to try to save the Democrats in the Senate who are vulnerable. And guess who's pushing for this? Guess who wants the IRS to do this? The Democrats who are running for re-election are the primary pushers behind this. Oh, and by the way, in the vote on Lois Lerner, I said it was 23-14. Well, the 23 people voting to ask Holder to prosecute her were all Republicans. And the 14th to vote against it were all Democrats. So it's pretty obvious. If you're a Democrat and you commit a crime, or you work for Obama and you commit a crime, that's fine with the Democrats in the House of Representatives. We'll take our second break now.
The United States Justice Foundation, since 1979, has been dedicated to instructing, informing, and educating the public on legal issues confronting America. That means you and me. When necessary, this nonprofit organization has had to litigate to present the constitutional view. Since 1980, USJF has submitted testimony to the U.S. Senate on all but one U.S. Supreme Court nominee. Learn more about USJF by visiting their website at www.usjf.net. Support this nonprofit as it defends our rights, our liberty, and our Constitution.
With all the back and forth in today's politics, it seems as though the Constitution gets lost in the mix. If you want to brush up on your constitution, then join Michael Conley every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. for the show Our Constitution on AmericasWebRadio.com.
Who is or what is USJF? It is a nonprofit legal organization founded to protect our rights through the U.S. Constitution. Active in educating the public, USJF has also contributed directly and indirectly to legal defense efforts in many celebrated cases involving fundamental conservative principles. Cases of note include the Mount Soledad Cross case, the Arizona immigration law case, the Obama eligibility cases, the NDAA illegal detention issue, and many more. Help this nonprofit as they help you. Visit www.usjf.net today.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
I'm back on Eric Holder. I mean, this man shows his contempt for Congress every time he's in front of them. He testified yesterday. And he got into it with Louis Gormit, who is a congressman from Texas. In fact, he's the congressman for the district next to the one I live in. And Louis is pretty hardcore. He's a conservative. But he was basically asking Eric Holder why a congressional inquiry into the trial of the Holy Land Foundation. Now, the Holy Land Foundation is basically a Muslim front group, which was named an unindicted co-conspirator. Conspirator in a trial here in Texas a couple of years ago, a trial that found several people and organizations guilty of giving money to terrorist groups, raising money here in the United States through mosques and through other Islamic organizations, and then taking that money and giving it to Al-Qaeda, giving it to Hamas, giving it to Hezbollah, and there were some people convicted. And the Holy Land Foundation was an unindicted co-conspirator. Why? Why weren't they indicted? Why wasn't anybody charged? Because they're continuing to do it. We know they're continuing to do it. And members of Congress know they're continuing to do it. And they've been asking Eric Holder about it. They want to know why they've not been indicted. They want to know why this organization is able to continue doing what it's doing. And they want to know what ties this organization has to the Muslim Brotherhood. By the way, there are more and more people who work with members of the Muslim Brotherhood who are being hired by the Obama administration. Some of them in the Department of Homeland Security. But Eric Holder has been asked about this, and he's refused to provide documents. And yesterday in front of Congress, he basically told members of the House committee, I'm not giving you anything, and you can't do anything about it. Obviously, that's because he's been held in contempt. He doesn't care that he's been held in contempt. And so he's going to continue to do his illegal acts. And when I get a chance, I'm pretty snowed under at the moment, but, you know, I've drawn up these articles of impeachment about Obama. We're getting them out to members of Congress. And we need more and more members of Congress so we need somebody to sign on board. Look at these articles of impeachment. Just go to my blog, www.michaelconnelly.com, and you can find the articles of impeachment there, or you can go to the United States Justice Foundation website, usgf.ed, and you can find the article there. Take a look at them, print out copies, mail them to your members of Congress, or email a copy of the article to your member of Congress. So you have read these, and you believe they are correct, and you want to know what your member of Congress is going to do about it. Are they going to file these articles? Are they going to sign on board with somebody else who files these articles? Are they going to vote to impeach Obama? All of this is information that you're entitled to know prior to the election, many of which are going on right now, the primary elections for 2014. You're entitled to know this information. You're entitled to find out what members of Congress are going to do. But I've done these for the president. Now I need to do it for Eric Holder. There's a lot of people that contacted me once they read these articles of impeachment, and they said, you know, this is the first time anybody ever put it all together, where you can read in just a few pages everything Obama has done to this country that is illegal.
I want to do the same thing with Eric Holder. And one of the things that Eric Holder has done, and not until he got Operation Fast and Furious, which he lied about. He said he didn't know anything about it, but we found out he did. He got Americans killed. And then you've got the Department of Justice going after reporters, particularly those from Fox News, listening in on their, monitoring their telephone conversations, monitoring what, who they're calling in order to try to intimidate them. Eric Holder, those who run Congress, puts his hand, right hand up in the air, swears to tell the truth, and then lies in his teeth, says he didn't know anything about this. Then they find a copy of a signed memorandum where he signed off on it, ordering it to be done. That's one of the reasons he's been held in contempt of Congress. But the thing that worries me more than anything else about Eric Holder is the fact that he is in a conspiracy to steal the 2014 elections for the Democrats, to make sure that they at least maintain control of the Senate and possibly take control of the House. And if that happens, of course, we're done. The United States of America can cease to exist as a constitutional republic. That's what they ultimately want to have happen. So how's he going to steal the elections? Well, there's a number of things he's going to do. And several of them he's done in the past. There's a federal law that requires active duty military personnel who have to vote by absentee ballot to receive those ballots from their secretary, the Secretary of State of the state they live in, at least 30 days prior to an election. This is a federal law. There are economic sanctions that are put on the secretaries of state and their states if they do not comply with this law. Prior to the 2010 election, when the Democrats began to realize how bad that was going to be for them, they decided to shut down a military vote. There was a meeting of the secretaries of state going on in Washington, D.C., secretaries of state from every state in the Union, and they were briefed by a Department of Justice official, an employee of Eric Holder, and they were basically told, don't worry about that law. We're not going to enforce it. And privately, the people who were the blue state secretaries of state, who were Democrats and who were loyal to Eric Holder, and to Obama, were told, don't send out the ballots in time. We want to cut the military vote. Why? Because, well, for the most part, evidence has shown that the members of the active duty military vote about 70% of the Republican candidates from the area from where they live. That's something that obviously Eric Holder doesn't want to have happen. So he did that in 2010, and thousands of ballots were not delivered on time to our service people so that they could cast their ballots and have it counted. It didn't save the House of Representatives. It probably made a difference in some of the Senate races, co-Senate races. Excuse me. Fighting allergies today. But it got worse in 2012 because there Obama was running for re-election. And they wanted to make sure he won. So they did whatever they needed to do. And we know that as many as 100,000 service personnel, members of our military, who are overseas, many of them risking their lives on a daily basis, fighting for this country. Their votes were not counted in the state of Ohio. That's just one state. That's 100,000 votes not counted in the state of Ohio. Now, Ohio went for Obama, at least it appears he did. Well, what would have happened if those votes had been counted, and what would have happened if some of the votes that were stolen had not been counted? Some people who voted two, three, or four times had not been allowed to vote two or three or four times. The state could very well have gone for Romney. Other states, same thing happened. Military votes were not counted. Now, North Carolina military votes were counted for the most part, but they were, a lot of them were offset. Why? Because now it has been known that at least 35,000 people in North Carolina voted more than once in the 2012 election. And guess what? They were all Democrats. They all voted two or three times for Democratic candidates. All of this has happened under Eric Holder's watch. Remember one of the first things he did after he was appointed by Obama? 2008, there had been some members of the new Black Panther Party at a polling place in Philadelphia on Election Day when Obama was running for president. They stood out front in their paramilitary uniforms. They were armed with billy clubs. They were sitting there using them menacingly, slapping their hands with them, waving them around, showing them to white voters coming in to the polling place, and basically saying, using racial slurs like cracker and redneck, saying, okay, things like, okay, whitey, we're going to have a black president now, you're done. People were turned away from the voting polls. These people were arrested. Black Panthers were arrested, criminally charged by the federal government with harassing and intimidating voters, because that is a federal offense. Criminal charges. Eric Holder, after he took over as the chief judicial officer or chief enforcement officer in this country, took over the Department of Justice as Attorney General, he dropped the charges against all these Black Panthers. So that shows what he's capable of. It shows how he operates. We've had whistleblowers come forward and say that every decision in the Justice Department is made on the basis of race. Who gets prosecuted, who doesn't, is made on the basis of race. And here's something that makes it even worse. We had, 2012, at the invitation of the Obama administration, allegedly it came to the civil rights groups who requested this, and Obama approved of it, because it had to have Obama's approval. It had to have Eric Holder's approval. We had 44 monitors from the United Nations in 11 states in this country, including the state of Texas and the state of Tennessee, to monitor our elections and see if the voter ID laws, for example, that we have in Texas, were being utilized in a discriminatory fashion. Of course, the United Nations said they were. They're going to be coming in again. Tennessee has said they're not going to allow them in the state of Tennessee. Texas is basically saying the same thing. But this is another intimidation tactic being used by Eric Holder. He's suing the states. The Supreme Court has ruled that it is okay to have a, require a picture ID at the polling place for people to be able to vote. And Eric Holder continues to sue
South Carolina, Alabama, and other states that require voter ID.
Let's take our final break now.
The United States Justice Foundation, since 1979, has been dedicated to instructing, informing, and educating the public on legal issues confronting America. That means you and me. When necessary, this nonprofit organization has had to litigate to present the constitutional view. Since 1980, USJF has submitted testimony to the U.S. Senate on all but one U.S. Supreme Court nominee. Learn more about USJF by visiting their website at www.usjf.net. Support this nonprofit as it defends our rights, our liberty, and our Constitution.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on americaswebradio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on americaswebradio.com anytime you like.
Watchdog is a term given an organization like the United States Justice Foundation, which since 1979 has been watching out and, when necessary, taking the appropriate action from testifying to litigating to protect our constitutional rights. USJF, a nonprofit organization, is nationally recognized not only as a watchdog, but many in the government, as well as those involved in legal cases, have also called the USJF a bulldog for the tenacious approach in their presentation and proof of what is right. Find out more at www.usjf.net. Support USJF as they support you.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
So Eric Holder needs to be not only impeached, he needs to be prosecuted. He's trying to steal the 2014 election. He's violated federal law, violated his constitutional oath of office repeatedly, and nothing has happened. Now is the time for something to be done. And the U.S. Justice Foundation, we're trying to do it. We need your help. We need financial support. You've heard me talk about these veteran suits that we've got going, one of which we filed and won, and the second one, the most important one, which we have not filed yet. Why haven't we filed it? Well, the pleadings are drawn up. We're ready to file. But we needed more money. We need about $20,000 in the bank to file the suit initially, to pay to have it done, and to pay some attorneys to work with us on it, because we only have a few in-house attorneys, me one of them, but the suit is not apparently going to be filed in the state of Texas because we don't find a plaintiff here in the state of Texas yet. If you're a veteran, and if you're being affected by the veterans, the VA, telling you you're going to be declared incompetent to handle your own financial affairs, and you're being denied the right to purchase firearms, you're even own a firearm, and you live in the state of Texas, or you live anywhere, contact me, particularly if you live in the state of Texas. Go to usjf.net, and you can find a way to contact me there, and we will get back to you. But in the meantime, we need to get about $20,000 in our hands dedicated to this, and you can do that. You can send a check to USJ, the United States Justice Foundation, or you go online and make a donation, and you can say, this is for the VA, the veterans who's against the VA. And that money will be designated for that purpose and that purpose only. So usjf.net, that's the website. Because it's getting worse out there. And I've talked in this show repeatedly about how veterans are being declared incompetent for minor PTSD, for everything about a depression, be declared incompetent because they let their spouses pay the family bills and handle the family checkbooks. None of this is being done with due process. They're being declared incompetent. In order to appeal that, they have to, the burden of proof is on them. So they're being declared incompetent, and they're told that they can no longer own, purchase, possess, or transport firearms or ammunition. There are 159,000 veterans that we know of on the NICS list. That's a list of people who cannot legally purchase firearms. 99.9% of them do not belong there because the law requires that to be put on that list, you be a convicted felon, you be a known illegal drug user, or you be adjudicated to be mentally ill to the point of being in danger to yourself or others. These people are not convicted felons. These are veterans who have served our country, have fought for us, who have put their lives on the line to protect the Constitution. They're now being denied their constitutional rights. They have not been adjudicated to be mentally ill to the point of being a danger to themselves or others. These are thousands and thousands of veterans out there. Now it's getting even worse. Now we're finding out that, you know, you may have heard on the news about the new VA forms that are coming out. They're supposed to help veterans get their claims processed faster. Because right now, many veterans who are making a claim for benefits they're entitled to, benefits they have a contractual, the government has a contractual obligation to give to them, because it's part of what they were promised when they signed up to serve this country in uniform. But it's taken them a year, maybe 2 years, for their applications to even be processed. well, members of Congress are claiming that's too long. Obama says it's too long, et cetera, et cetera. But we know Obama lies. But now, so instead of making it easier for veterans and processing claims faster, they put in these new regulations with new forms. It's going to make it even more difficult for veterans to get their claims processed. Here's the kicker. Veterans who have trouble filling out these complicated forms are being declared incompetent to handle their own financial affairs and are being put on the list of people that cannot purchase or own firearms in this country. How's that for a catch-22 for veterans? The tragedy here is not just the people who are being denied their constitutional rights, but the veterans. And I've talked to some young veterans. These are veterans who were injured in combat or may have some PTSD issues. And by the way, PTSD is not classified as a mental illness. Anybody can get PTSD. If you lost your job, you can suffer from PTSD. If you lost a loved one or you've been in an automobile accident or anything traumatic has happened in your lifetime or in your family, you can suffer from PTSD. It is, for the most part, a short-term problem. You shouldn't even have to take medication. In fact, some of the medication that these veterans who are diagnosed with PTSD or are forced to take can actually can be causing the increase in suicides we have, not only on our veterans, but our active duty military. But anybody can have the PTSD. Yet that is being used to disqualify veterans from owning firearms. This is unconscionable, particularly when they're broadening this whole thing. And by the way, the United States Justice Foundation, we have filed in the last couple of weeks two opposition memos to proposed federal regulations. One is, and Obama's already signaled this by doing an executive order, which he wasn't legally entitled to do, and HHS not entitled to do it either. They are basically amending the HIPAA Act, which is the act that requires you have a right to privacy of your medical records. They are amending that to actually encourage and in some cases require the states to turn over your medical records and even private hospitals to do it to the FBI if you have ever been treated for depression, if you've ever been diagnosed with PTSD, and you're not even a member of the military or veteran, this is for everybody. If you've ever taken certain medications when you were young, if you had ADD or ADHD and you were given medications, then you're going to be put on the list of people who cannot purchase firearms. This is a major all-out attack on the Second Amendment. We filed an opposition to that. We also filed an opposition to proposed ATF regulations, changing regulations, which broaden the scope of the definition of mental illness to the point of being unbelievable. Broadening the scope of the definition to the point where, again, anybody who's ever had PTSD, anybody who's ever told a doctor that you were depressed, and it used to be that it was only for, you know, people that people were declared incompetent or diagnosed as mentally ill to the point of being in danger to themselves or others, if they had been involuntarily put in an institution. Well, now involuntary has been expanded to the point where if you've ever been to family court, you were involved in a divorce, you know, judges will routinely order the entire family, all the kids and the parents, to get a routine psychological evaluation just to make sure there are no problems and to help decide who gets custody or who gets visitation or whether or not there should be joint custody. Well, guess what? That is involuntary commitment under the new rules and regulations. You can then be put on the list of people who cannot purchase firearms. In fact, you're going to be required to be put on that list. So basically, if you've ever gone to a psychiatrist, if you've ever gone to a psychologist, you ever told your doc, family doctor that you were feeling depressed for any reason whatsoever, you are now vulnerable to having your rights taken away, your Second Amendment rights taken away. So we're going to be fighting that issue, too. Already are fighting it. So please, go to usjf.net and help us out. Every donation helps. We don't have any real big donors. The head of Progressive Insurance doesn't give us $1 million a year like he does to the ACLU. Interesting name, isn't it? Progressive Insurance gives $1 million a year to the ACLU, a so-called progressive legal group. Kind of makes you feel all warm and fuzzy inside, doesn't it? But anyway, come and help us out. And by the way, I want to thank everybody again for the remarkable book sales I have going on right now. The book, my novel, Amayeli, A Story of America, is selling extremely well, getting some rave reviews. The Mortarman, this book about my dad's unit during World War II, is also selling extremely well and getting rave reviews. John Trudell, who is a good friend and author, well-renowned, well-read author, did a great review on it recently on Amazon. And the book is on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and virtually every place else. Both those books, Amayeli, A Story of America, and The Mortarman, are both on Amazon as ebooks and regular paperbacks. And available as regular paperbacks are my two books of ghost stories, sort of campfire story type books, Riders in the Sky, The Ghost and Legends of Philmont Scout Ranch, and America's Liveliest Ghost. And also my book, which is continuing to sell very well, The Book on Our Constitution, which tells you, explains to you what the Constitution really means in layman's terms and in terms that everyone can understand, and is being sold a lot to people who want to take it to schools, give it to their children. So thank you for having me on today and listening to me. And please, have everybody you know tune in next week to hear Kevin Freeman. This is going to be something that everybody in this country needs to hear. Have a good day.
This is America's Webradio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.